When it comes to great championship upsets, there aren't many better than Villanova beating Georgetown in 1985. Thanks to an astounding team shooting performance against a ferocious defense, the Wildcats and tournament MVP Ed Pinckney shocked the Hoyas and the college basketball world with a 66-64 win, the school's first national title.
That's it. Villanova has done it.
Ed, so many basketball stars from New York City learned the game playing street ball, whether it was at Rucker Park or elsewhere, and you are no exception. How did that atmosphere prepare you for the competition you would encounter at the college level and the NBA?
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think, that park obviously has a lot of history and intrigue to it. It's not very often that you go to it like a park in the street and you watch Dal Dawkins and all kinds of guys play in that park. I mean, it's a very unique situation. In my case, in my time during high school and college, everyone from Chris Mullin to Mark Jackson to Kenny Smith to Walter Berry, all those guys played in that park. So you got a real good flavor of unbelievable competition every time you stepped on that park. You wanted to play your best, you know. I mean, you couldn't come there and say, well, this is just going to be some kind of ordinary run-of-the-mill run, you know. You're going to play against the best competition in New York City. So, I mean, the best competition always prepares you for any competition. So, I mean, that was always the reason wherever I was when I was playing, I tried to get back to New York City to play in that park.
Now, Villanova was a good basketball school. It had made two Final Fours in its history prior to your arrival. It wasn't a complete powerhouse, so what drew you most to Villanova over the other schools that recruited you?
You know, all the things that are like related to, just going to college, like the ability to get playing time. And I had two other teammates that I played camp basketball with, a five-star basketball camp. They were also going there. They were considering the school. So Gary McLean and Dwayne McLean committed to Villanova first. And, after they committed, they convinced me to come, you know. I like both their style of play. They were both guards that, knew how to play. And then the proximity to New York was also another reason why I liked the chance in going to play there.
The Big East was established in 1979, and Villanova was added to the conference in 1980, joining Boston College, UConn, Georgetown, Providence, St. John's, Seton Hall, and Syracuse. This came a year before you joined the Wildcats. What amount of exposure, and what did you really know about the conference being in New York City and with New York City being a primary market at that time?
Well, I was lucky because there was a guy on my high school team by the name of Fred Brown. And Fred Brown committed to Georgetown. So, I had a pretty good sense of what the league was about because of my high school teammate. And, John Thompson had come to my Stevenson High School to recruit Freddie Brown. So, during some of those meetings, I actually sat with my high school coach, Steve Post, and listened to John Thompson talk about the Big East, Sleepy Floyd, who they played against, the competition intriguing to me. So I kind of had a little bit of history before my recruiting process through Fred Brown.
With the Big East and the chance to get familiar with certain opponents, did you get a sense, even in the conference's early stages, that the new rivalries were being established, whether it would be with Georgetown, Syracuse, or St. John's? And with that, maybe you were drifting away from the inner-city rivalries in Philadelphia with those Big Five schools like St. Joseph's, Temple, or Penn. Did you get an idea, did you get a feeling that maybe the strength of the rivalry in the Big Five was weakening and then the strength in the Big East rivalries were strengthening?
Well, you know, the rivalries were all the same because at that time, in the 80s, St. Joe's was a power. They were not, you know, I think for people that weren't around in Philly at that time, they sort of felt like, well, you know, you play Penn, St. Joe's, Temple, and LaSalle, those are all easy games before you get to the Big East, and that was not the case. I mean, Temple was a great team who, you know, each and every year from Coach Sandy, but the tournament and same thing goes. Penn was really good. And LaSalle had some really talented teams with some talented players. So that definitely wasn't a sense. I think it was initially before I got to Villanova, Massimino would sit down each player and try to explain the Big Five to us. And no matter what he said, nothing really prepared you for the intensity of those games. It was always really intense because, you know, many of those players played in the Philadelphia area and wanted to play their best at Villanova. In regards to the Big East, those rivalries really began in high school. I mean, I played with Chris Mullin, you know, on various AAU teams from the church. So we had a closeness, but when he went to St. John, I mean, we knew everything about each of his games. The same with Patrick Ewing. I saw Patrick Ewing play for the first time, Austin Shootout, and played against him. And, you know, all those rivalries began at, you know, the various AAU tournaments and, you know, five-star basketball camp. So those rivalries were just as strong as the Big Five rivalries.
You just mentioned him earlier, Rolly Massimino, your coach at Villanova, certainly showed a lot of emotion on the court. Was that what he was like in practices and everywhere else?
Yeah, he was on, as they say, on every day. He would, at the beginning of practice, sit all of the players down, and he'd pick out one thing he saw in the world that he thought may be of interest to us. He'd talk about that for, you know, couple of minutes. It could have been anything. It could have been a presidential race or something that tugged at his heart that he thought he should know about his players, because he always felt more to basketball in life than just winning and losing. He tried to develop a relationship with all of his players, and he did a good job of that. But after that 10 minutes was up, it was very, I mean, he would get after us. I mean, he always said, you're not going to be able to win if I don't put you in the most difficult situation during practice. So, I mean, he would just yell and scream for the entire practice at us. You know, and we all understood that, you know, coach is doing this because he wants us to be prepared to win at St. John, at Georgetown, at Seton Hall, at Syracuse. And, you know, as a young player, you don't always understand that, but, you know, I'm thankful that he prepared us in that way. I mean, he did a great job of
it. Lane bounces in. Wayne McClain scores.
Great pass by Eddie Pinckney. Good drop off and hustle by Presley, because he was out quick by Turner, but still got to the ball. See this sequence. A good bounce pass inside. Eddie Pinckney realizes he's got a man open, dumps it inside. Great job.
Now, during your career at Villanova, you had experienced a pair of Elite Eight appearances and a second-round loss as you entered your senior season in 1984-85. The same held true for the two teammates you had touched on that were part of the same recruiting class as you, Dwayne McLean and Gary McLean. That said, what were the expectations going into that season with a senior-laden club?
Well, our expectations were to try to get to the Final Four. Matt Firmino would often talk about playing in the Final Four, and we had three great leaders, Gary, myself, and Dwayne, before we got to that point. Those three leaders were Stu Granger, John Pinnell, and Mike Mulkin. Those three guys were the upperclassmen when Dwayne, Gary, and myself were freshmen. And they were great leaders. I mean, they really were. And they taught us that when you're the upperclassmen, there's a certain way you've got to work. There's a certain way you've got to teach. You've got to help the coaching staff teach the younger players. And, you know, our expectation of winning to guys like Hal Presley, you know, Harold Jensen, Mark Polanski was to try to get to the Final Four. And we thought, like, in our conference, because we played against Georgetown, because we played against St. John's, that would prepare us in the correct way.
Your Wildcats were in the top 20 at one point, but a 2-5 stretch from late January to early February put Villanova out of the rankings, ultimately finishing with a regular season record of 18-9 and 9-7 in the Big East. And then you would fall in the Big East tournament semifinals to St. John's, who was number one at the time, so no shame in that. But you, with the expanded 64-team NCAA tournament, the first year of the expanded tournament, you were given an 8 seed. Did you agree with that seeding by the selection committee?
We didn't because we felt like, you know, the conference that we played in certainly should have helped us get a higher seeding. You mentioned St. John's and losing to them in the Big East tournament. Well, you know, 4 of our 8 losses were to the number one ranked team in the country, and both those teams were Georgetown and St. John's. Those two teams shared the number one spot all season long. So we just felt like if you lose to the number one team in the country 4 times during the year and you play pretty close games against those teams, you should have higher seeding. But that wasn't the case. In fact, Massimino had talked about not taking the bid and going just, you know, not playing or going to the NIT. But, you know, it's crucial that they've been special things happen for us.
Yeah, very, very glad. I'm sure you're very glad that you did take that bid. Number 8 in the Southeast. Narrowly beat Dayton in the first round, then came the upset of top-seeded Michigan. In the Sweet 16, another close win, this time over Maryland. And then you toppled North Carolina in the Elite 8. Was that the point, the UNC victory, where the team really had the belief that the national title was a possibility, even though there were 2 tough games still to play?
No, because we just took each game as they came. Again, you know, for all of us who were the upperclassmen, you know, we had the opportunity to go to the Elite 8 and all of that, and, you know, knew how to prepare, you know, had a great understanding of how to approach all those games. You mentioned the game to Dayton. The game against Dayton was in Dayton, that first round game. So we played Dayton on their home court. I mean, that's not something that ordinarily happens. Usually you play on a neutral site. That was something also that kind of fueled us. You know, we got a lower seed, but we were also saying, well, you know, they didn't really have much respect for us because they slotted us into being a pretty good Dayton team on their home court. So they kind of anticipated us losing. And that really fueled us to for the Big East was a great time because, as I mentioned earlier, the two number one teams in the country, both St. John's and Georgetown, played in our conference. Boston College, great team. You know, they had a long, deep run in that tournament as well. And so did Syracuse. Syracuse is talented as anybody. So we just felt if it wasn't Syracuse, if it wasn't St. John, if it wasn't Georgetown, that we had a really good chance to play against the other team that we were going to face coming up. It didn't matter for UCLA, Carolina, Kansas. They just didn't play in the Big East, and we felt that that was the toughest conference in the country.
Yeah, it really showed it in 1985 as three of the four Final Four teams were Big East schools. Obviously yourself, Memphis State, Georgetown, and St. John's. In the national semifinal, Villanova beat Memphis State. In the other semifinal was the showdown between the Hoyas and the Redmen. Were you pulling for one of those teams to win? Did you want to see one team over the other?
We felt, believe it or not, we felt we might have a better chance to play or keep the game close against Georgetown as opposed to St. John's. And when you look back in the history of the NBA game, you know, Chris Mullin, the top 50 player, Mark Jackson, third leader in assists, Walter Berry was a long time man. I mean, that was a very talented team, as were Georgetown. We were just happy to be there, but we just felt we had a confidence against Georgetown. I don't know what it was, but we just felt like we wanted to play against Joe Patrick Ewing and arguably one of the best teams, just not of that era of all efforts being defensively. If you look at the numbers, I mean, historically, they're one of the best defensive teams of all time in college. So, I mean, we had a quiet conference about playing against them, but I don't speak for all my teammates. Either game we knew was going to be, really difficult to play against either team.
These two teams have played each other twice this year. Villanova led both times at the half, but then Patrick Ewing and the Hoyas pulled it out. 52-50 in overtime and 57-50 when the rematch was staged in Landover.
Yeah, it would be Georgetown was already being considered as one of the great teams of all time even before that game was played. So how much of a motivation was it, Ed, to head into a contest where you were really given no shot to win, combined with the fact that you were playing a familiar opponent that you had lost to twice before during the regular season?
Well, I mean, we approached it. We were very loose. We were a loose group because no one was expecting us to win, including our parents. I think each and every one of our parents at the time kind of told us all, hey, listen, if you go into this game, you get blown out, it's not a problem. You've gotten this far. You guys have all done a great job. I know that was the talk that my parents gave to me. And, we didn't really think, there was no pressure on us at all because, I don't know how much of underdogs we were at the time, but, there just wasn't any pressure at all. All the pressure was on Georgetown to win back-to-back titles. And so it was really to our advantage to be able to come in with no pressure at all and just play the game. I mean, that's all we kind of had to do since everyone expected us to lose by 20 points or 30 points even. So,
what was your approach toward facing Patrick Ewing, who most definitely intimidated a lot of opponents, especially on the defensive end? How did you approach him, both in the regular season and in this championship game?
Well, I think, there were a lot of unique things about playing against Patrick that really helped me play against Patrick. Dwayne McClain had played against Patrick Ewing in the state finals a number of times in New England. Dwayne McClain played at Nolan Coleman High School, and, you know, they have faced Patrick, and he's known Patrick for a very long time. The same with Gary McClain. He had played up in New England, and had saw and understood how great of player Patrick Ewing was. So, after seeing him a number of times, there was that fear wasn't there. And for myself, having played against Patrick, Big East tournament, played against him at five-star basketball camp. I mean, we were just so familiar with each other that the fear factor was taken away in the NCAA tournament. Very often, it might be the first or second time that you see a team. Now, if you're facing Georgetown for the first time, there's going to be a fear factor because they were intimidating. All of that familiarity with the tournaments and the conference really helped us along the way. That was the biggest thing I would have in the final game.
It must be noted that there was no shot clock at the time. There was no three-point line. That said, offensively, how critical was controlling the tempo, controlling the pace of play, waiting for the right shot against such a strong defense?
You know, it was really important. I think, you know, if you look at the game of basketball back then, most teams played traditional basketball with the center, power forward, small forward, and your guards. You know, Rolly Massimino was known for playing inside-out basketball even before that. So it wasn't the same that we did differently. And that style, really helps us get to an Elite Eight. All the Elite Eights that we were a part of and, you know, all the games that we won during our 4 years there at Villanova. So it was simply about turning the ball over. We were always a low turnover team until we played against them. It just so happened that Gary McClain played the game of his life. He just had a great game, and we were able to avoid all the turnovers.
Yeah, avoiding turnovers and shooting the ball at an amazing rate. Did you get to a point in the game where you're thinking, how long is this going to go on for with regards to the shooting percentage? Were you at any time fearing Georgetown would make a run?
Yeah, because they always did. We always got to a point where they would, you know, they'd steal the ball or you would take a great block or Terry Martin would, you know, make an amazing play. There was always a point within the 4 years that that would happen. And, you know, because of Gary's ball control, because of Jensen's ability to make shots, because of, you know, Chuck Everson's ability to come in for a time to just play solid defense. I mean, everybody did their role to perfection. And that's what Massimino talked about this week. Playing the best game of your life. And, you know, all of those tournament games against Dayton, Michigan, Carolina, all of those games prepare you to play that way when you play in the tournament. I mean, fortunate for us that, everybody did their part. I mean, everybody was really focused and got a chance to do their part to perfection. Otherwise, we lose by 25 points. I mean, that team was so good. They were so good. I can't even begin to tell you how good they were.
Broadnax having to help out inside. Jensen puts Villanova ahead at the 2:35 mark.
Ice water in his veins. They gave him the shot and he took it.
This would be one of the greatest upsets in the history of championship games at the NCAA tournament.
The final shooting totals were staggering. 22 of 28 from the field, almost 79%, making 9 of 10 shots in the second half. And to top it all off, you were named most outstanding player of the tournament, so not a bad way to end your college career.
No, it was great, man. Great way to cap your senior year off. You win your last game, and, you know, all the hard work you put in for all the 4 years that you were a coaching. There's a yearly trek down to you know, his school to watch his team play from all the guys. So it's a lot of fun. It's something that is a part of our lives even today. You know, we get a chance to share it each and every year the tournament comes around.
It's still discussed as one of the biggest, if not the biggest, upset in the history of the NCAA title game. Do you feel it's as significant of an upset as most perceive?
Well, that's for other people to judge. You know, we just share. It's a moment for the guys that were part of that team. It's just, it is the best moment for the guys that were a part of that team. We don't rate the upsets across the board for different sports or anything like that. We just are all happy that we were a part of it. But, you know, as far as rare rates, we don't care. We're just happy that, you know, we were a part of it.
There are plenty of reasons why that Villanova team and the run that was made still resonates in Philadelphia nationally. Being the lowest-seeded team to win a national championship is a classic story of David prevailing over Goliath for a championship. For you personally, what made that Villanova team so special?
How close we were. Everyone was really close. As I mentioned before, all the relationships started back before we got there. Started really at five-star basketball camp with both McLean's and myself. But I think when you spend that much time with your friends, I mean, you develop a bond. I mean, I think I attribute it a lot to Massimino and his coaching style, the way that he approached every day. I mean, it was very much like a family, you know. I mean, that was really big to him, and it still holds true today. As I mentioned, you know, there's about six players from that team that go down to watch his team play every year. So the bond is still there, and very often when you talk to other guys who get a chance to play past their college career, they don't have a bond with their college team. That's not that kind of save. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot of credit goes to him and what he was able to kind of build at Villanova in terms of, like, that family atmosphere.
As Ed mentioned, Rolly Massimino, now age 81, remains in college coaching and has compiled more than 250 victories in 10 seasons at Kaiser University in West Palm Beach, Florida. Of his 761 career wins, 357 came in his 19 years with the Wildcats. Following the championship win in 1985, Pinckney went on to a 12-year NBA career. Soon after his professional days were over, he'd return to his alma mater, where he would join Jay Wright's coaching staff from 2003 through 2007. Currently, he's an assistant with the Denver Nuggets. My thanks to Ed Pinckney for joining us on this latest edition of Profiles in Sports.